Good morning. Today is Tuesday, 4th of July.
Happy Independence Day.
And to all, yeah, hopefully you're somewhere where there are fireworks if you like them. And you're somewhere where there's no fireworks if you don't like the noise. Or you have concerns about fire.
Or if you're like our dog.
Yeah, yeah. No, not today, not ever. Yeah.
Who quakes in fear.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Our dog just does not. Yeah,
we got one of those temperaments too.
Yeah, I know. I mean,
see, ours doesn't know what to do, so shaking is like an advanced form of panic for Braith.
Okay. Well, yeah. I mean, I forget about it until
the moment's
at hand. Until it starts, and then you see her quaking and realize that she just doesn't know what to make of it. So last year we tried to kind of wrap her up a little bit with a blanket.
Yeah.
That seemed to help her, deal with some of her firework anxiety. So
the bungee cord kind of kept it in place?
I just think we just kind of tied her up. It's an 8-pound dog, right?
Yeah.
So, I mean.
It's a backpacker.
It's a lap dog, And so, anyway, but that, I don't know. Anyway, I think there was something that Cynthia strapped on her that kept it snuggy.
Yeah. Dog snuggies, the next new thing we're going to see on QVC.
Yeah, well,
One size fits all.
It is nice to celebrate the independence of our nation. And, there's a lot of things in this country that maybe we can all, don't all agree about that maybe aren't right, but there's a lot to be thankful for. And so
come together on this one.
I choose to be thankful for this country and for my...
Not something that's often heard from a... CPA, thankful for federal government.
Yeah, well,
but
there is something.
There are occasions.
Job security.
Problem. Yes. Our quote this morning is from an unknown source. Right there, it says "source unknown."
Source unknown.
If you think you're too small to be effective, you've never been in bed with a mosquito.
So true. I mean, I got bit last night in the yard, and I went in to sit down and do some reading and. I thought, how does that itch so quickly? And so, that's really true.
Another one of life's little miracles, huh?
So is what source was his
unknown.
First name?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. So
yeah.
From the famous unknown family.
Known as Ditto. Well, keep it on topic with blood just for a short little bit.
Yeah.
I know you're on the blood bank board and you guys have got some stuff that's going to be happening in the next little bit. You want to bring folks up to speed?
Well, it's an interesting time. Tom Schellert's been with the blood bank for, what seems like eons, and particularly to him, it's been 20-something years. And so he ultimately is going to get to retire. And so we're going to start the process to try to find someone that can fill Tom's shoes. And that's, I hope he's not listening, but that's going to be a big... those are going to be big shoes to fill, and Tom has more than admirably served the blood bank over the years. He has been a leader locally in not just blood banking activities, but in Rotary and at the Chamber of Commerce and a bunch of places. And he's also been a leader in blood banking in the country. He's been one of the national I'll say it and I'll get it wrong, but I think it was the AABB. He was the American Association of Blood Banks. I think he was the national president.
I'm glad you didn't go CCDD. We'd be here for a long time.
Yeah.
It's 8:19.
You've never heard us before, because we're something brand new. It's called Destination Radio. If you live in Ferndale or Gold Beach, Blue Lake or Klamath, Brookings or Eureka, you'll be looking for someplace different to take the family, something special to do next weekend. The best destinations for day trips and overnights, for hiking or biking, for beachcombing or birdwatching, and you'll turn to us for ideas, because you're the reason we're here, to help you find your close-to-home destination. Stay, play, and relax with us, Destination Radio.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:24. We're back to Talk Shop this morning with CPA Bill McCauley. Bill, the 4th of July certainly isn't a typical time to be thinking about taxes, at least for most of us.
Well, if you think about it, there is a little bit of a tax tie-in to the whole independence movement.
Yeah, and the Don't Tread on Me and you know, states' rights, et cetera, et cetera.
Tea parties and stuff.
Yeah.
And there was the Americans... You know, if you look back at some of that history, back with King George and, you know, all the decisions that were made, there's some, I mean, if you read 1776, it's a great book.
That's the McCullough book?
Yeah.
It talks stunned about, you, huh?
Yeah. Nice job. There's a lot of great discussion of what was going on in England. And, you know, it presupposes they know the exact dialogue, which is not true. But, you know, I think it gives you, it's based on, the writings of people from the time. So it's really quite fascinating to see what the considerations were. And really, Britain kept trying to appease the colonies and you know, finally just says, okay, we're not, you know, we're going to be done with this. But, we didn't like stamp tax. And, you know, it just was one thing after another that we didn't like. And, of course, I guess we know what happened.
Yeah, now look at them.
Yeah. Well, I mean, yeah.
It is interesting. Do you have a sense, good, bad, or indifferent, that we understand that so much of our government is based on fiscal issues? There was a little bit of morals, certainly, starting out, but most of it was fiscally based and who's in control of the coffers.
Yeah, well, a lot of the discussions, going back to those times, were about states' rights versus, and how are we going to how's a constitution going to be put together? You know, the whole constitutional Congress and all those discussions. And you think about what people had the compromises that had to occur to get enough states to agree to make certain things happen. And, yeah, a lot of it is fiscal and a lot of it is questions of authority. You know, who's going to be determining? You know, there's a real concern that if you have this giant federal government, that individual states wouldn't have rights to self-determine in a lot of areas. And I think... You know, to some degree that states have rights in certain areas, but I think there's been inroads made into some of those states' rights that I'm sure that there's a number of people that have concerns about. And yet, where else in the world do you want to live?
Yeah, there's always chances to improve wherever your situation is.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, with all the things, I mean, and, you know, probably everybody listening has their own list of things that irks them about how things work and what's going on, and they're not the same list. Yet I think most of us can agree on some core principles, and I think those are the things sometimes we forget to focus on. We tend to focus on those things that divide us instead of those things that unite us. And ultimately, when you're focusing on those things that divide you, it seems to create more of that type of thinking. So
when did income tax start?
Well, the income tax started. There are a number of initiatives to try to deal with revenue that was needed to have an army and all those things. The income tax actually started in, as I recall, in the early 1900s, and the tax code was originally came into play, and it has continued to change over the years. I mean, right now. When I was going to school, when I learned about income taxes in the very early, in like 81 and 2, I was taking tax classes. It was the Internal Revenue Code of 1954. That's what the code was named. The code was so rewritten in 86 that now it's the Internal Revenue. It's known as the Internal Revenue Code of 1986. Of course, a lot of changes, that was the Reagan tax law changes, those things we associate with Ronald Reagan's presidency. And a lot of stuff has changed since then. And unfortunately, every time we have a problem, we think in the tax law, the best way to address it is to create more complexity. And albeit it is a way to address it. I think a lot of times the complexity is undue. It creates a system that's very difficult for the average person to deal with without some form of assistance, whether you're using tax software. I mean, sit down. I mean, for most of my tax returns, if I had to prepare those things by hand, it'd take forever. You know, because you'd be constantly going to tables and whatnot. Well, we use software that knows if I correctly tell the software, this is who the dependents are, and this is what, you know, is it an earned income tax credit dependent, or, you know, you gotta characterize the dependents appropriately.
Still,
but when you do it,
there's still the operator variable here, isn't there?
The software will say, hey, this is what the exemption amount is, and this is when you go to make this calculation, these are the numbers that come into play. If you have to do all that independently by hand when you're filling out the forms in paper and you've got very much in your return, it's not going to be easy. You know, the IRS, I just answered a survey last night that the IRS sent to me about the forms and publications. And I got thinking about it as I was answering the survey, that really, as complicated as things are, those things are actually relatively good. The problem is it uses terminology that, okay, I'm accustomed to that terminology, but a lot of people aren't very accustomed to that terminology. So you go to read it and you go, what does that mean? I mean, for years...
So more of a jargon issue than a technical issue.
It can be, yeah. And I mean, for up until, what, 6-7 years ago, there was no standard definition of a dependent. So it depended on what part of the code you were looking at to determine what a dependent was. And there's still some variations in terms of that. But the point is, the code is complicated. We use the same terms for different things. And that leads to confusion. It leads to errors. It leads to a lack of trust in the system.
And a commercial break.
And most important.
Yeah. That would be the revenue part of the IRS.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. It's 8:30.
We do as a community to make Humboldt a better place to work and live? The answer is to make sure our kids are literate, able to plan financially, move forward in their education so they are better prepared to enter our workforce, and become contributing and productive members in our society, community, and economy. How do we do it? Through the Decade of Difference Initiative. Visit decadeofdifference.org and find out how you, as a parent, student, or business owner, can help. It's the Decade of Difference. Be part of it.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:35. We're back to Talk Shop this morning with Bill McCauley on this 4th of July. Talk Shop presented by CDH Painting and by REDEC. Bill, the concept of property tax and taxing authorities is, obviously that's steeped in our history and in the roots of the country also. As things have evolved in other areas, has taxing authority status changed also?
Well, that's an interesting question. I mean, from the standpoint, I mean, you think back to how our country started and how things have evolved. It used to be, you know, that voting was really a portion based on, you know, owning property.
On ownership, yeah.
You know, and we've gone away. We don't do that anymore. And I've heard people argue we should because, you know, you got people who are voting that have no oar in the waters in some cases about matters that they're voting on. And on the other hand, I think, you know, I mean, you look at and say we're a democracy and, you know, one man, one vote kind of thing. I understand we're a representative republic, but the point being, these are all interesting transitions that have occurred over time as we've evolved from how we make these decisions about these things. Now, keep in mind, in terms of authorities, the state of California is an example. When we have property taxes, there's a basic property tax that's levied, and then what we see if you look at your property tax bill, assuming you receive one, you're going to see in most cases a bunch of other little add-ons that have been not unlike your cell phone bill. The difference is with your cell phone bill, you had no say because that's really been imposed by Congress or that's been imposed by regulatory fiat or some other reason why we've got all these charges that hit our cell phone bill. That, believe me, I don't know what they all are, and they're you know some of them are small and some of them
I know
are
what the
bigger.
FCC one's all about.
Yeah,
yeah.
So you think about our property tax bills. Well, in if you live in the city of Eureka, you've got two bonds from Eureka City Schools that are on there. Which, by the way, what are they doing at the school here?
Parking lot and security.
Okay.
Right now, you can't, with all the things that are going on now, having a secure campus is a significant concern. Well, and before, you just walk through the breezeway.
Yeah, Lafayette School is dirt in front right now.
Yeah,
so
it's Tonka truck time.
Yeah.
It's big boy toys. Yeah, it's all kinds of fun.
I'm sure they're wanting to get done fast. So
by mid-August. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Hopefully. So you know, the Eureka City Schools has passed two bond issues in the last 20 years, and those are on your property tax bill. But those were voted upon, and then in some cases, there's a supermajority that's required to put those on. And so we've had all these evolutions in how things are taxed. You also have, I think, College of Edwards has a bond on there, and so you start looking at all these different things that are attaching to our bill, but the taxpayers are voting on those. And there has been over time, as an example with the state of California. State of California requires a supermajority for tax increases and in certain cases, and it gets pretty arcane, and I think that I'm not sure it's as the lines are as bright as they once were, maybe after the GAN. You know,
Jarvis Gann
was passed, but things have changed somewhat. It was pretty. It was pretty clear at that point what.
But that was before you
couldn't do.
Before you were taking your tax classes.
It was not before I was aware.
Yeah.
Good. If you're living in California, in the mid-70s,
yeah,
even if you're in high school or
college,
that
was the signature event of the decade.
It was pretty noted.
One of them.
Prop 13 was a big deal.
Big deal. So why does the tax code treat income from tax bonds and other instruments of government, muni bonds, et cetera, differently than it does regular income? Where did that come from?
Well, I think first of all, can I try to fill out the corners of your comment?
Of course.
So if I buy a bond from a company in this country, let's say I buy a bonds from Ford Motor Company, I get paid interest on that bonded debt, and when I receive that interest, I pay tax on it. So that's, it's like having a certificate of deposit or some other form. But we do have a preference in our country and in our state for debt that has been issued by governments. And what that means is that, as an example, if you buy a qualifying bond from the Eureka Redevelopment Agency, then that bond... and that may be not the best example, but the bond.
Fiction's always good.
The bond would, typically you would not pay tax on the income you receive from the bond. So, from a standpoint of somebody who has capital to invest, it makes that bond certainly more attractive when you look and say, gee, I don't have to pay income taxes on the interest income I receive.
Why is the city different than, or municipality different than, the private sector?
The main reason is it allows for a lower borrowing cost, I believe, for government. So as an example, if I'm looking and saying Ford Motor Company is going to have to pay me 6% because I'm going to have to pay a 33% tax load on that, so I'm going to net 4%.
And not guaranteed.
Right.
Often.
So, but if I have debt from a municipality, then I'm able to, or from the state of California, so a state of California bond.
Right, yeah, governmental jurisdiction.
So now I can have a 4% bond for the state of California that's equivalent, in my example, to a 6% bond, fully taxable bond. So, you know, and that calculation can be a little bit muddy, but depending on everybody's tax rates and where they sit. But the point being, that makes the bond, the issuance cost is theoretically lower because there's a deduction for it. If you buy U.S. bonds, they're fully taxable for federal purposes, but for California purposes, they're not. And if you buy, anyway, so it depends on the bonds.
Tax statuses, or impacts, exactly.
And so it makes a big difference, but it does make a big difference on the issuance cost, and it means that government can issue debt at a lower effective interest rate because it's tax preferred.
Somehow that doesn't come shocking, does it?
Perhaps not. I mean, candidly, Brian, I mean, it's been that way since I've been doing tax returns.
That's so why I was wondering, where did the concept come from?
I'm not sure, but it's ingrained in my thinking. I don't really question it because it's the way it's always been in my experience. And so you just say, okay, well, that's, you know, municipal tax-free municipal bonds are, you know, can be attractive for certain people. And then, you know, from a standpoint of advising clients, you know, we have to look and say, okay, what's the difference in the yield? You know, I mean, do you want your entire portfolio to be tax-free? Perhaps not, because maybe, you know, if you have zero taxable income because everything you own is invested in tax-free bonds, you may be missing out on the lower effective tax rate on the first income that a person would receive and make those more attractive. So it's a balancing act for people to decide how much they want to invest in various things.
Active income treated the same as passive income?
No. And yes.
Good. We'll pause on that one and we'll be back. KINS News and Information Time, it's 8:43.
What's the shopping show all about?
If you haven't listened to the show before, it's kind of tough to describe.
I guess the easiest first step is to simply go to the Shopping Show website.
TheShoppingShow.net.
And join us this Saturday for the next Shopping Show.
On KINS 106.3 FM.
KURY FM 95.3 and 101.3 in the Illinois Valley.
And KEKA 101.5 and 100.9 in Eureka.
Good morning, KINS News and Information Time. It's 8:48. We're back talking shop this morning. Happy 4th of July, everybody, with Bill McCauley. Bill, before the break, I asked, why is active income treated differently than passive income? And you said that there was a yes and no to this. Yeah. You got it.
Yeah, sometimes, if you assume active income, that's actually defined in the tax code, but I think what you mean is...
Oh, there's a technical definition.
Yeah, but I think what you mean is income that's derived from trade or business kind of thing. Is that what you're referring to?
Yeah, compensation from work.
Yeah, that's taxed. The tax rate may be the same. The income tax rate may be the same because it may be taxed as ordinary income, whether it's passive or whether it's earned that's based on earned income that comes from services. However, if I'm self-employed or if you're an employee, you are paying self-employment tax or FICA taxes, or your employer may be paying half your. So there's a different element. So if you're it really shows up when you're self-employed, because what happens is you pay the income tax plus you pay the 15.3% self-employment tax, which is Social Security and Medicare. So if you're in a 25% federal tax bracket and you have a 15.3% self-employment tax, that marginal tax is pretty significant. So yes and no. There are some differences, but...
And that's the perfect answer for a 4th of July program, talking about government.
Mm-hmm.
Yes and no. Thanks for coming by.
Been a pleasure. Happy 4th of July, everyone.
See everybody tomorrow.